In the post-war years, the Pacific Highway from Cowan to the Hawkesbury River became totally inadequate in the face of increasing motor vehicle ownership and population growth. At this time, the Central Coast was becoming a popular tourist area.
There was congestion between Sydney and Newcastle, mainly. What happened in the people, even in those days, didn't go on the longer type holiday trips. The Central Coast was still a fairly powerful, significant tourist area. I think in the 50s there was up to 18,000 vehicles per day in holiday period on the road. And clearly it was a torturous trip on the old Pacific Highway. And it took over five hours to get to Newcastle, and it probably took, you know, at some stage 3 hours to get to Gosford and the entrance in those holiday places up there.
Kevin Kirkland was a driver in his father's bus company during the 1950s.
Well, the road was very narrow, windy, and some sections narrow and dangerous. It would take sometimes, I remember from Gosford to Sydney, on a Sunday afternoon, it took us up to 5 hours to get to Sydney.
The obvious solution was to build a freeway from Sydney to Newcastle, a very ambitious plan at the time. The decision to build the first section from the Hawkesbury River to Mount White was taken in 1960.
It was at this time that the first of the big contractors looking for roadworks, well, they were all saying, you know, you fellows just play around with building it, give it to us and we'll build it cheaper and we'll build it well. And Neville Wran was Premier, Pat Hills was Minister for Roads. Pat Hills wanted to get them off his back a bit. Howard Sherard, as Commissioner for Main Roads at the time, he wouldn't have a bar of letting this stuff out to contract. He just didn't want to be in it. So anyway, Pat Hill said, well, the best way to get rid of them is give them a go, call tenders. And very quickly, under his direction, a tender specification was put together to design and construct a toll road from Sydney at least as far as the latitude of Gosford. We're all convinced. No tender. None of them would know how to write a tender for that. They had no way of getting an estimate of cost. They'd be shooting in the dark. Didn't expect any tenders. Tender time was up. Opened the box. There's two tenders in there. One from the Tease Brothers, which was a load of rubbish, completely non-complying. It went straight into the bin. That was the end of that one. The other one was from a man named Solomon. None of us knew who Solomon was. An address in London. Wow. Sherard's immediately offside to him. He didn't want him. And one of the requirements was the tenderer had to have in hand, in effect, £50 million to start. Solomon gave as the source of his £50 million, £50 million that he had in the Bank of England in London. Direction to the legal officer. Jeff Sheldon was the chief legal officer. Would you make arrangements and ring the Bank of London and find out if a Mr. Solomon has £50 million and is it earmarked available for this? And I said, please, Mr. Sherard, can I stay back with him that night with the phone call? I won't talk. So Jeff put the call in about 8:15 one night. And as soon as he started to talk, where he was from, what it was about, yes, at the other end, the Bank of England, yes, you wish to speak to Mr. So-and-so. Mr. So-and-so came on the line. Yes, you're inquiring about Mr. Solomon and his assets to get a major road built. Yes, he has got £50 million lodged with us for that purpose, and he would have access to more money. Well, that would be pretty obvious if he had £50 million in the bank sitting. Oh. We couldn't get to work soon enough the next morning to tell Sherard. Is the proposal economical? Well, that was my job. The road works typically if you cost the cost of the road and the cost of the benefits and you put one over the other and you get a cost-benefit return, and any reasonable road work pays 10% or better. The largest one I'd ever seen was 22% benefit over cost per annum. This came out over 40. Wow. So I was directed to do that and have it ready with him. Yeah, Sherard, you know, he didn't give you much time to do things. Next meeting of the committee, I said, it's 42%, it's da-da-da-da. That's enough. I don't want to hear any of the tech. Oh, I don't. So he had to report to the minister, Pat Hills. And then I was told to be ready at 11 o'clock with the plans and figures and the mosaic in the recreation room. The doors are locked. Then in comes Sherrard and Pat Hills and nobody else. Oh. So anyway, Pat Hills heard it right through. And then he looked at Sherrard and he said, well, Howard, I think we give him a go. Well, I'm sitting here or standing there watching history being made now. And then the next line from Sherrard, Mr. Minister, you've got to give yourself another commissioner. I'm not going to do it. Whew. Pat Hills looks at me with a little bit of a grin and he says, that commissioner of yours hits hard, doesn't he? And that was the end of that.
Eric King was engineer in charge of outer freeways construction at the DMR.
Yeah, it was a challenge, I suppose, because we were moving into earthworks, the size of which we'd never tackled before. Drilling, blasting were of a magnitude that we'd never had before.
That was the showpiece of highway engineering in New South Wales, and probably rated as good or better than anything else in Australia, and was at that stage almost world class. And that was great, because you really felt you were working on a project that everyone that drove a car was looking at with admiration and saying, oh, wouldn't it be lovely if we had interstate highways, etc. like that. So it was good. It gave me a different insight, because I'd gone from the construction to design side, so it gave me a totally different appreciation of road design. But the beauty with the Sydney-Newcastle was that it wasn't like the normal rural highways where you were building very much to a budget. At that stage, the standard was to build a very high-speed, safe road and then see what it was going to cost, rather than we've got to build X kilometres of road for Y amount of money. We went to 4 6-lane divided, completely access-controlled highways. Everything else was just 2 lanes.
There was a challenge of moving thousands and thousands of cubic yards of sandstone in such a manner as could be assured of being stable in embankments which were up to 80 feet in depth, and cuttings almost as high as that also.
Well, I think the single biggest challenge was the what we call the big cut and the big fill, which are on the south of the Hawkesbury River. It was the biggest cutting and the biggest fill, and I think it still is the biggest fill that we've ever built in Australia for a road. One big problem that you have to be careful of is the effect of blasting on properties nearby. Fortunately, for a lot of the work we did up there, it was out in the uninhabited areas, but when we got down around Moonee, we had to be careful. People have got cracks in the walls of their buildings, and they complained, and we had to then we adopted a system before we moved into an area. If there was a house or a building that could be involved, that was inspected and photographed and so on before the work started, and then checked afterwards. We had one claim from an establishment at Moonee, which we knew could not have been affected by our blasting, but we paid up because it was a convent and we couldn't dispute the Mother Superior that she wasn't telling the truth. We had one unfortunate accident on the job when a rock was pushed over from one of the contract dozer driver, pushed a rock over the side, which was too big to have been pushed over, and he pushed it over, it bounced off a berm and bounced down on the Pacific Highway down below and landed fair on top of a car and killed two people. The car was just driven into the road. They didn't know whether it was they were male or female or what, but the whole thing was just squashed into the road. The whole thing sounded very callous, but the insurance company who were handling the matter came to see me, and the chap said, "Oh, look," he said, "we've got nothing to worry about." He said it was an old chap and his son, and he said, "There's only the mother left," and he said, "She's pretty old, and she won't last too long," and he said, "The son was a bachelor, so payout's going to be minimal," he said. And I nearly threw him out of the office. This fellow had no feeling at all about the suffering that woman must have gone through.
There were some problems with the pavement surface on that first section of the freeway.
Well, on the initial length, the asphalt that was laid as the finished surface was a dense graded asphalt. And the water, during times of rain, well, rainfall, the water, although it was running off the road to the drains at the side, there was always a thin film of water on the top. And when a car was coming around the curve, and the curves were really too small in radius for the speeds that the cars we were adopting, and quite a number, and it was a combination, I guess, of worn tyres too, but the car could lose traction or lose attraction in the rear wheel spin. And of course, once it gets out of control, there's nothing you can do about it. You've just got to go with it. So there were a number of these accidents occurred, and I actually witnessed one once when I was in the car with Mr. George Faulkner, who was the engineer in chief at the time. We were following a car during rain, and this actually happened. The car smashed into the side of the cutting. Nobody was hurt, but the car was dented, but it was drivable, and the chap drove away. But that's when we started looking at looking for means of avoiding or overcoming this problem, and they developed this open graded mix, which suited our purposes, and we overcame that problem.